From Buck's studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. Along with your calls, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yeah, cell phones. You know, walking down the street and almost bumping into people with cell phones. Well, what is happening to the cell phone user who is not paying attention to their walking? What's going on? And permanent hair dye and hair straighteners, do they really increase the risk of breast cancer? Information from the NIH.
As you know, I don't worry about
that. You don't worry about that. That's right. Does not affect you at all.
What's our recipe?
Garlic and rosemary latkes. Lots of latkes. Now, latkes are potato pancakes, but we call them latkes, and they're delicious. And this is a garlic and rosemary variation on an old recipe.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phone now. At 1-800-462-7413, 800-462-7413, and Zorba, our first caller, is a listener in Edmond, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, how can we help?
Well, I have my right big toe joint, I thought was probably gout, but that has been diagnosed out, but it does not bend as backwards as well as my left foot does. So I go to kneel, it's painful. When I walk, it's a little painful. The joint is swollen probably maybe almost twice as large as the left foot. I don't understand what hammer toe is, and I've had some friends have hammer toe and have it operated on. Good luck and some bad luck?
Yeah, right. That's right. Good luck and bad luck. I don't want to say that's what we say about hammer toes. How long have you had it?
I've had it for probably several years.
Several years. Okay. How old are you this year?
59.
59. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the gout issue, first of all. So gout was ruled out. How was that done? How was it? What did they do to make sure it wasn't gout?
Doctor looked at it. I don't eat much red meat, which is...
Yeah. Gout is an inherited... We don't really know what causes gout. Some people with high uric acid get gout. Some people don't. And food affects the uric acid levels pretty minimally. Did you have a uric acid test done, a blood test done for uric acid?
I had a blood test done, and it came back normal.
Uh-huh. Do you know what that number was?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Okay, because sometimes you can actually have gout with a number that is close to normal. And I just mentioned it. The only way to completely rule out gout is to actually go in the joint and actually pull out fluid from the joint and see if there are gout crystals there. So, you know, a clinical evaluation that you don't have gout does make some sense, but sometimes you need that. Gout toes tend to be red, hot, swollen, very painful suddenly. Has that happened to your toe?
It doesn't get red or hot, but I do have occasionally a sharp pain, you know, just by sitting here and all of a sudden
any,
sharp pain.
Any injuries to your toe? Soccer, basketball, baseball, trauma,
no.
Kicking a door in when you wanted to get into a house?
No, just a typical stump toe, you know?
Just a typical, that's it. Hammer toes, by the way, if you go on the net and you look at them, they actually have an appearance. I mean, it doesn't sound, hammer toes are usually toes number 2, 3, 4, and 5. But go on the net, look at it, and you can see what hammer toes look like. They kind of pull up, and they're really a joint issue. I mean, you can just have arthritis of the toe. Have you had it x-rayed at all?
No, sir.
I'd probably get it x-rayed, see if anything is going on, see if you've got some toe arthritis. Sometimes we actually inject the toe with a steroid, and sometimes that'll get it to settle down and become more comfortable. You freeze the top of the toe with a little xylocaine, put some steroid into the joint, and sometimes it'll settle down with that. So, because you might have osteoarthritis of the toe, that would be the most likely thing. And once again, you could have gout in the toe, and sometimes the x-ray will show something, it'll actually point to the fact that it could be gout. I don't think you've had that completely ruled out, but unlikely that you have it. Doesn't mean it's zero, because gout affects podagra, means the great toe with pain. But I would get an x-ray. Have you tried anti-inflammatories on a regular basis, Aleve or ibuprofen?
Yes.
How much have you taken?
I usually take one a day.
Yeah, you know what I would do? If I had pain in my toe, I would take two Aleve twice a day for 2 weeks and see what happens, 2 to 4 weeks. Because Aleve is great. It's a 12-hour drug. Ibuprofen is an 8-hour drug. Double the dose on the over-the-counter. That's the anti-inflammatory dose. They're 220-milligram tablets. You'll take 440 milligrams. Take two tablets twice a day for 2 to 4 weeks. See if that gets rid of your pain. And if it does, it just means you're getting rid of the inflammation of your toe. And some people then, when you stop that, things get better. And if that doesn't work, I'd look at a steroid shot, see if that helps. But X-ray may be up, may be one of the things that really up your game to find out what's going on.
All right. Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
You're welcome. You take care now.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate that call at 800-462-7413.
I did, full disclosure, did a lot of research on gout. We had a drug from Takeda called Uloric that we researched for a number of years in our office. And it was a drug to compete with a drug called allopurinol, which you take every day to reduce the risk of actually having another gout flare. And allopurinol is cheap, inexpensive, generic. The Takeda drug is okay when the allopurinol fails. But getting back to the issue, what I learned from all the gout research I did is the absolute diagnosis is made by going in the joint, but nobody wants to have a needle in a red-hot swollen joint. Mm-hmm. So we often do it clinically, but a lot of gout is then missed. And so in this particular case, if this person is better, I think getting in the joint and finding out what's going on may actually be good. And if the joint is not red hot and swollen, you can find out. And if you've got chronic pain in a joint, sometimes pulling out fluid and seeing what the fluid looks like under the microscope and doing other tests can really give you an answer and help you with your chronic pain.
Mm-hmm. 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 1-800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, injuries from cell phones?
Yeah, injuries from cell phones. Do you ever walk down the street and somebody goes, oh, sorry, and they almost bump into you because they're looking at their blankety-blank phone?
Sure.
Blankety-blank being swear words that we don't say on the radio, but you can just fill them. And it happens all the time. You're walking down the street, people looking at their phones, and then you wonder what happens to them. Well, I'll tell you what happens to them. They get head and neck injuries. And there has been a big spike. The recent research in JAMA, Otolaryngology, ENT, has shown a major spike in head and neck injuries in the emergency room, basically since you've been able to text and look at your phone. And as soon as the iPhone basically came into view, which is roughly a decade ago, the spike went up and up and up and up. And it's quite interesting. I have a cousin in California who recently got killed looking at a cell phone, and somebody in the parking lot plowed into him.
Ouch.
Now, I don't know the details, whether or not he was walking looking at his cell phone or he was just looking at his cell phone while it was. But in any case, he was not paying attention to what was going on. And I don't know if that would have actually helped him from getting killed. But the fact is there's been a major rise also in pedestrian deaths in major cities among them because of cell phone use. Mm. And it's not talking on the phone and walking, which is one thing, because at least your eyes are looking. It's looking at the phone. And
information on those phones.
Well, I'll tell you one of the information. There's something like Pokemon. There's a Pokemon game. Do you know what Pokemon is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What is it?
A game.
That's
like
right. There you go. Well, there's a Pokemon game where you actually do hide and seek. It's not hide and seek. It's sort of like a scavenger hunt. And you go around and you have to have your phone in a GPS location in order to get the prize to do things on Pokemon. Mm-hmm. In other words, in order to get Pokemon points. So people are then looking at their phones in a big city in order to go to a spot in order to be able to get a virtual coin as part of the game. Well, as soon as that was introduced, there was a spike in injuries. So it's not just texting on the phone. It's not just looking at the news on the phone. It's also playing games on your phone. And we talk about texting when we're driving. I mean, we know it's bad and there are laws against it. Nobody talks about texting and looking at the phone when they're walking.
Yeah. Do you ever look at your phone while you're walking?
Almost never. But I do sometimes look at the phone. Yeah. But it's very rare. I don't want to walk and look at the phone because I'm afraid I'm going to fall. Now, I'm 72. If I fall, it's, I'm concerned about it. But when I was 18 or 19 or 16 or 24, when I had more balance, I might do the same stupid, dumb things of looking at the phone, unless society started to realize you're not supposed to look at the phone when you walk. Mm-hmm. You know, when you walk, sometimes it's kind of good to be aware of your environment, bikes and trees and people around you, and listen to the sounds that are around it. Maybe you could be thinking about your own thoughts and what you're doing for the day. Why do you have to be looking at the phone all the time? Yeah. I mean, there's something about it that is simply obviously enticing.
Yeah, I can never get my phone out of the living room.
You can never get your phone out of
the living room. It's sort of tied in the
But, you know, you don't relate to this because you don't have a cell phone.
No,
when you
I
look
don't,
at things.
Yeah.
You don't relate to this. But all you have to do is look on the street.
And, oh, yeah, I see it all the time.
Well, and Tom, although you do not have – do you have a smartphone or a dumb phone?
I guess it's a dumb phone.
It's a dumb phone. But
it
I
has
have,
a dumb caller.
But I have people your age who come in the office – over the age of 70 and 75 and 80, more and more, actually looking at the smartphone so that they can actually talk to their kids with FaceTime. Mm. But they are not the people walking down the street. It's the young people that are walking down the street. And when I come close, when somebody is coming close to me looking at their phone, you know what I say to them?
Put that away?
No. Boo!
You don't really do.
I do. And they get kind of shocked because if they're too close, I go, boo, and they kind of pull away. And that's what we should all be doing.
800-462-7413. Talking about
boo.
Phones, let's get back to our next caller. A listener in Burlington, Wisconsin with us. Hi.
My neighbor was looking in his lawn, and I said, what are you looking for? I'm looking for my cell phone. I said, what's your number? He couldn't tell me his phone number because he doesn't use it.
Oh, he can tell you the number of his phone because he doesn't use it.
Well, a lot of people don't use the they don't know what their numbers are.
Right.
But anyway, so we had somebody call his number, and the phone rang, and that's how he got it. But anyway, I have a friend of mine who has gout in his finger, mm-hmm. and the doctor said, you're eating too much meat. Mm-hmm. So then, and they said, you can have turkey and mm-hmm. chicken, and that's mm-hmm. not meat. But and then he goes and has the lunch meat, mm-hmm. and I just wonder what lunch meat is. That's meat, isn't it? Or what is it? And
well,
his gout has not gone away.
Well, first of all, the way gout doesn't go away, never goes away. We treat it, and dietary treatment of gout is really pretty ineffective. I mean, it really is. The foods that will tend to produce flares, that produce the flares, generally will be foods that are shellfish, lobster. We don't eat a lot of shellfish and lobster here. But even then, if you're on a perfect gout diet, what is going to happen for the most part is you'll eliminate uric acid. It'll go from 8.0 to maybe 7.0, down 1 point. Mm-hmm. Allopurinol, which is a drug that actually works because it reduces the production of uric acid, is an incredibly effective drug, and it's been around for 50 years. And diet is not effective. It doesn't work very at all. Look at Benjamin Franklin. Look at Louis the 14th. Look at Thomas Jefferson. I'm just mentioning great people who had gout that I know. But they had all gout, and they didn't know what actually caused it.
How do you know that?
How do I know that? Because I have Google, and Google tells me all this junky, this stuff. But actually, you don't do it by diet. You do it with the medication because it's very effective. Now, when you take the medicine, for the first 6 months, you often have gout flares. And for that, you have to be treated either with colchicine, a prescription drug, or one or two Aleve, one or two twice a day. And that effectively treats it often for the first 6 months. And after that, for most people, they reduce their flares by maybe anywhere between 50 and 100%. And I don't recommend diet to anybody. I say, eat whatever you want to. Take this drug. It works. So your friend is still having gout flares, right?
Yeah, he has these flares.
He needs to be on allopurinol. That's what he needs.
Well, lady, speaking of diet, I think I have got Potomac fever. Every time I get at this time of year when these elections come around, I want to run for president. I don't know if I'm eating the right thing or what I'm not doing. But I'm signed up with the FEC, a Federal Election Commission. I'm all set to go. And it's just, I don't know what it is. I grew up in Washington, D.C., and in the Potomac River, and I think it might have been the water or something.
Well, there is Potomac fever, but I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was some kind of an infection. But I think you're talking about a different kind kind of an infection, a political infection. Uh-huh. And yeah. We're a health show.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'll just concentrate on my diet and try to calm down.
But seriously, allopurinol is really the way to treat gout. Very effective, very well-tolerated drug in the right dose, 300 milligrams, and you can even go up to 600 milligrams a day. If that fails, the name brand drug, Euloric, is something that you can use. But allopurinol, up to that 600 milligrams, will work at least 90% of the time in people. So,
okay, good.
Good luck. Keep on eating that. Well, you don't eat the lobster, but keep on eating what you want.
We appreciate the call. Zorba, should we talk politics the rest of the hour?
I don't think we'd be able to do that, Tom.
Okay. Before we take a break now, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite know-it-alls, the Grammar Police. Okay, Zorba. This email came to us from a listener named Pete in Racine, Wisconsin. Dear Dr. Zorba and Tom, you often describe your callers as feeling nauseous. The correct word is nauseated. Something nauseous, a fetid odor, for example, is what causes someone to feel nauseated. Although some people may indeed be nauseous, the remedy for that condition isn't what listeners are calling in for. I know some use the words nauseous and nauseated as if they mean the same thing, but the learned person...
The learned person, I got it. That's knows, right. Not the colloquial person, the learned person.
Knows better.
Knows better.
I will stop now so as to avoid going on ad nauseam.
You know, the next time somebody says they're nauseous, I'm going to correct their English. And you know what they're going to say to me? I'm nauseous. I feel like puking. Let's just go to puking. Puking. Let's do that. That's a nauseating term.
Okay. Does Zorba disregard for the English language make your stomach turn? Join the Grammar Police by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our delicious recipe is coming up, along with more of your calls, of course, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number to call if you have a question for Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Before our next call, Zorba, garlic and rosemary latkes.
Oh, you said it correctly. Have you ever had a latke?
Garlic?
You know what a latke is?
I always say garlic correctly.
That's right, garlic. Latkes. Yeah. Lots of latkes. So latkes are potato pancakes. And it's a Yiddish term. It's a German term. And I remember as a kid, not these latkes, but one of the things that would happen is in the summer in Chicago, there were picnics to raise money by B'nai B'rith, which was a Jewish organization. Mm-hmm. And I would go with my mom and dad, and we would go to the picnics. And they would bring in an actual... oven, like a stove, a four-burner stove. These guys would bring it in to the middle of the forest preserves, Cook County, around Chicago. And they would make latkes. They'd have a great big stove, which they brought in with propane tanks. And then all afternoon, they would make hot potato pancakes. And they taste very similar in some ways to French fries. you know, because they're potatoes and they're hot, but they have a totally different texture. And even as I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking about the summer, I'm thinking about my mom, I'm thinking about my dad. It brings back fond memories. What kind of memories do latkes have for you?
I don't think I've ever had a latke.
That's right. And you don't even know what latkes are. But you know what potatoes are.
You
know what a pancake is, but this is a hot potato pancake, and it's a great variation on a hot potato.
You got me
pancake.
With French fries.
I got you with that. Well, this is similar, and they've got to be eaten fresh, just like with French fries.
Yeah.
You know, if you have French fries, how long is it before they begin to not taste very good?
Like, oh, when they right get away. Cold, obviously.
Yeah, as soon as they get cold, it's like, why am I eating this? Yeah. You know, cold French fries? Mm-hmm. I might eat cold pizza in the refrigerator, but I never eat cold French fries.
Yeah.
So start out with 1 pound of russet potatoes peeled.
1 pound russet potatoes peeled. Now, does it have to be russet?
Well, the potato really does make a difference. In Idaho, potato will be more mealy. Mm-hmm. You really want to have russets, and there's a difference in potatoes in terms of starch and how they fry up. So you want to have a russet potato. Mm-hmm. Five scallions chopped up.
Five scandals chopped.
That's exactly. You know, sometimes you read things and you go, scandals at a scallion, five scallion. Five cloves of garlic, thinly sliced.
Five cloves of garlic, thinly sliced.
You want to get some rosemary. You can get that in the grocery store, in the produce section. 10 fresh rosemary leaves, finely chopped.
10 fresh rosemary leaves, finely chopped.
That's right. And you're going to take all the little things off the leaves, leave things up. An egg. A tablespoon of all-purpose flour.
Big T, all-purpose flour.
Quarter cup shredded Parmesan cheese.
Quarter cup shredded Parmesan cheese.
Quarter teaspoon of salt and pepper.
Quarter little tea, salt and pepper.
And a little olive oil, just a tablespoon.
Yeah.
Okay. So first of all, shred the potatoes either using a food processor or a grater and place the potato shreds in cheesecloth and squeeze out excess liquid. So that's the thing. Potatoes have lots of liquid, and this is actually the most work you have to do. You've got to squeeze it out and push it out so that the potato shreds are dry. Mm-hmm. And that
what do
that,
you use to do that?
Your hands. Use your hands.
Really?
With the cloth.
All right.
You push it together. Actually, what you do in your case is you want to have, because you've got some shoulder pain, you want to have Monica do it. We got to say, Monica, you've got to make this recipe. You've got to squeeze out all the juice in the potatoes with your hands.
Actually, what was she saying? I'm doing a ton of exercises for
that
the shoulder.
That could be your exercise.
I can do that.
You know what? Yeah. You know what? You're coming over to my house to make it, and you're going to take care of my potatoes. I have just figured out how to delegate potato latke authority to you. You shred the potato. You get the liquid out. I'll do the rest of the recipe. Okay, so add these ingredients to the same mixing bowl. Scallion, garlic, rosemary, egg, flour, Parmesan cheese, salt, and pepper. Mix them together. Roughly divide the mixture in half, okay? Then divide the half into thirds. So you end up with 6 little piles, okay, of this mixture. This will give you an idea of how much mixture to form with the 6 latkes. You got everything all mixed together. Once you actually do this the first time, you'll have an idea of how much it is. But initially, you've got to, you won't know how much to put in, and your latke might be too big. And if it's too big, it won't taste as good. You want the right size latke. You knew that. Right? You knew that. Heat the olive oil in a large shallow pan over medium heat. Scoop up the pile of potato mixture with this. Roughly form it in the shape of a patty and put it in the pan. It's going to be kind of goopy and liquidy because it has the egg in it. Each latke will hold its shape once heated, and you repeat that for all 6 latkes. Now, it's very important that your oil become hot, that your oil is hot. So you want to heat the oil to the point where it's smoking. What oil do you think you should use for this time? This is a test.
Pennzoil?
Pennzoil. That's right. If you use Pennzoil. No, you prefer like peanut oil or avocado oil because it'll have a higher smoking point. Pennzoil, I think, would taste nearly as good. Cook each side of the latke until crisp and browned about 5 minutes. Press it down with a spatula to give it a nice kind of a sear. Mm-hmm. And serve it immediately. And I often serve this with sour cream. Delicious. Sour cream on the side.
Do you have side dishes, too, along with it?
Well, it's kind of the side dish.
It's a side dish.
Or you can have it at, like, we think of potatoes as a side dish, but back in the day, potatoes were the dish. But, yeah, you could have this as a side dish. This is a traditional dish, not this recipe, to serve during Hanukkah. For some reason, latkes are always served during Hanukkah. I don't know why. I can just tell you. And you know what? If you want a copy of today's recipe, guess mm-hmm. where they can go, Tom? That's right. You can go to WPR.org, WPR.org, Zorba, WPR.org. You can get our recipe, garlic rosemary latkes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
Well, I do know the phone number, 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413.
I've got to tell you, I recently saw a play. It was a Neil Simon play. Mm-hmm. And part of the play that they were doing was taking place in the 1930s. They were dialing numbers on the phone. And I forgot how long it took to dial the numbers. Yeah. You know, the person sitting there, when they were back and forth, it was not instantaneous.
Let's get a call here, Zorba. A listener with us in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Pleasure to speak with you. So my question is about mono.
Mononucleosis.
Also mm-hmm. goes under the name Epstein-Barr virus.
That's right, EB virus.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if mono and Epstein-Barr virus are the same thing.
They are. Mono is caused by the EB virus.
Okay, I'm just trying to get my brain organized here.
Sure.
So how long is it contagious?
Well, that's a good question. It's contagious for a while. I don't actually know chapter and verse how long it is. You get it by spreading through saliva. So teenagers often get it by sharing drinks. I mean, that's a very common thing here. I've got a Coke, you share mm-hmm. a Coke and do it. Mm-hmm. It used to be called the kissing disease because it's shared by kissing. It's shared with sex. But you've got to have direct contact with the person. We tell people to sort of separate out their towels, but I don't really know if that really makes a difference. But it's really a direct contact with saliva of the other person. I don't know how long you're infectious. You're infectious for a while, but I'd have to actually look it up. I don't know the answer to that question. Why do you ask?
Well, my daughter has been battling with it for just over a month now.
Mm-hmm. It takes a while to get over mono when you get it as an adult. If you get it like when you're 15 or 16, you get over it quicker. But as an adult, some adults takes them months to get over it. What sort of symptoms does she have?
She's still tired.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And but she feels like she's getting better.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this big controversy trying to find out the right information about being infectious.
When you say controversy, what did her doc say?
Nobody can give you the same answer.
Oh, so maybe that's where the controversy is, where I wanted to know.
I know what you said about direct contact mm-hmm. and moisture.
Mm-hmm.
My nephew mm-hmm. had mono about 6 years ago, and he had been up north hunting.
Uh-huh.
And so he said to the doctor, "How did I get this? Where have you been?" "Well, I've been hunting. It's just me and the guide, who never had mono, and mm-hmm. the moose."
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor said, "Did you use a payphone while you were there?"
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think it spread through a payphone. I think that might be like getting syphilis on the toilet. In other words, you don't get syphilis by sitting on a toilet, gonorrhea or chlamydia by sitting on the toilet. I don't think you get mono from a pay telephone. It's not that infectious.
It doesn't go on dry and be transferred.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that happens. It's not. That's. I've never read that. He got mono from somebody else. That's all. That's all I can tell you. He got it from somebody else. Sharing a drink. Could have shared a drink with somebody like that. I don't think he got it from kissing the moose.
God bless America. Anyway,
do you think it
could be seasonal?
No, it's not seasonal. It's not seasonal.
No.
Except when people get indoors, maybe they kiss more because they're indoors and they're close contact. So there may be seasonality to it in some parts of the country. But I don't think it's seasonal. I think it's related to age more than anything else because generally young people are more promiscuous. I take that back. Many young people are more promiscuous, although when you get to senior citizen centers like in Florida, in places the promiscuity goes up again. We're not going to go there. He didn't get mono from the moose. He didn't get mono from the phone. He got the mono from sharing a drink or sharing bodily secretions with somebody else. And if they didn't give you an answer, I ain't going to give you an answer either because I don't know the answer.
All right, then. And the mystery lives on, right?
Yes, it is, actually. And we will, by the way, I will look up on the web and we'll post on our web, zorbapastor.org. I will look it up and see where the controversy is for mono, and I'll follow up with that information on it.
And she wanted to know, because she's 61,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Being that old, how mm-hmm. she got it.
Well, she got it from either kissing somebody, having sex with somebody, or sharing a drink with somebody. She got it from another human being. She didn't get it from her dog or the toilet seat or the payphone.
Okay. Okay. Well, God willing, it'll be over pretty soon, right?
There we go. You got it. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Let's see. Anyway, 800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. Before the break now, Zorba, time again to machete our way through the wacky thickets of medical quackery. This is Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quacking Up.
Okay, Zorba, here's an email we received from Ed, who listens to the show on WUOT in Knoxville, Tennessee. He writes, "Zorba, I get a kick when you talk about various kinds of medical quackery. My personal favorite story is about a product sold in the 1920s called Ratathor. It was distilled water containing radium-226, good for what ails you until it kills you."
Until it kills you. So I did some research on Ratathor. Wonderful drink. It had radium in there. Remember, back in the 20s and 30s, people actually thought that radiation was good for you. I mean, that if you drank radiation, you would it was good. You know, it'd kind of perk you up. And these are one-ounce bottles made, by the way, with triple distilled water. I love it. Triple distilled. Like, distilled water is what – the way you distill water is you actually heat it and the steam then condenses. So they did it not once, not twice, but three times right. But they definitely put radium into it. And they said – they claimed that it would increase sex. Of course, they always claim that. They always say – cures cancer, increases sex. I mean, those are the things that always sell.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was an industrialist named Eben Byers who loved the stuff and was addicted to it and continued to consume large amounts, reportedly down a bottle or two a day over a 3-year period. And unfortunately, it actually killed him. The radium was deposited in his bones, whopping radiation. He developed holes in his skull, lost most of his jaw. This is from radium. Ooh. Because it got suffered a variety of their bone related illnesses and died really a gruesome death in 1932. Was put in a lead lined coffin when he was put in there. So when, by that time, they realized radium was bad for you. And then in 1965, an MIT scientist exhumed the coffin to see whether or not, indeed, the guy was radioactive. Mm-hmm. And he was. So they closed it up and put the coffin back on the ground. And that's the answer. Mm-hmm. So I've got a spin on this. I don't think we should consume radium anymore. I think that we should get radium out of the bloodstream. Radium toothpaste should be done away with. Radium dinks should be done away. Those watches that would light up in the dark. Do you remember those watches? They were green.
Yeah.
Get it? You know, those are. You know, I think getting rid of radiation in the environment is the right thing to do. I know. I'm going to get email from the pro radiation people because they live with the anti-vaccinators, and I'm together. That's it.
I'm still trying getting a picture of the coffin lined with
radium. How heavy would that be? If you were a pallbearer for a lead-lined coffin, do you have any idea how heavy that would really weigh you down?
But why? I mean, the coffin is under the ground. You don't need any lead lining.
Well, no. The radiation may spread around.
Really?
That's why of course, it may spread to people who are then being buried in the next site. It's not a problem with the dead people next to you. You know, they're dead.
Yeah.
So you don't really – doesn't matter if this person is, right? It's a problem with with the grave diggers that are digging around there. It's a problem with the people, or you know, I mean, it's a problem. So they put them in a lead-lined coffin.
Good for them to do that.
Yeah, they were smart back in 1932, absolutely, but not in 1922 when he was drinking this.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this segment? Well, here's your chance to be more radioactive by participating in our show.
Radioactive.
Just send us an email at
radioactive, Zorba@WPR.org. Don't forget, you can find us through Facebook, and we will have a picture of Radithor's certified radioactive water so you can look to see what it looks like so you can avoid it.
Yeah, but it won't give anybody...
You won't get any radiation poisoning from the web.
More of your calls coming up, another interesting topic to talk about, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413, our number. But Zorba, before our next call, what? Permanent hair dye and straighteners may increase breast cancer risk?
That's right. You're not going to be using hair dye and straighteners on your hair anymore because of that. Well, that's kind of a question that's gone up from the National Institute of Health. And in December, the International Journal of Cancer said there may be some risk of breast cancer from this. So this is using data from something called the Sister Study, roughly 47,000 women who participate in the study. They're sisters, they're gene-related in some manner or fashion. And they looked at women who regularly used permanent dye in the year. They were about 9 to 10% more likely to develop breast cancer. That's the question, whether or not this is a cause and effect. And among African-American women, using permanent dyes every 5 to 8 weeks actually was associated with up to maybe a 60% increase in breast cancer. So it might even be more prominent than that. And the straighteners may also increase the risk of breast cancer. And the fact is, a lot of people use dyes in their hair. A lot of people use straighteners in the hair. And we don't know the answer to this. I mean, this is it's not a controlled study. It's an observational study. And it's only one study. But it's a big issue.
I was going to say, do you believe this? I mean, does it make any sense?
Well, first of all, you're putting something on your hair, and the question is, does it make sense? Does it really matter? I mean, you're putting a chemical on your head, and the question is, does it really do something? And then what is the real risk if you use it? These dyes have been called previously by the FDA to be safe. I mean, they have a way of using it, where it's been safe. And you would think if this type of cancer, if breast cancer was actually caused by this, you would think that this would have come up sooner than this particular study. So the question is, why this study? Mm-hmm. They haven't found it in the nurses' health study. Now they have to look back at it. They haven't found it in other studies that are longitudinal studies. But I think it's enough, so we have to follow it. I don't think that this is enough for people to stop dyeing their hair or straightening their hair. But then the question is it some dyes or some chemicals? Maybe it's not all dyes and all chemicals.
Yeah.
In other words, it's like all insecticides are not the same. Some insecticides cause cancer. Some probably don't cause cancer. So it may be that there are certain chemicals within dyes. It may not be the dye. It may be the preservative within the dye. So there are a lot of things that have to go in before we make a final decision on it. However, if you're concerned about your health, if you have a family history of breast cancer, if you're worried about breast cancer, then you have to take this study seriously. But we don't know if it's real without more work.
1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question for Dr. Zorba, but I first want to say that I'm so excited to be on this show. I mean, I feel like a celebrity.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
We're excited to have you join us.
We are. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so Dr. Zorba, I'm 73 years old, but I'm really in good shape and have always exercised and everything. And I'm having this little issue that's driving me crazy. And I've talked to my doctor about it, and they just say you're getting old and everything. And honestly, if you would look at me, people would probably think I'm maybe 60 or something. So I get these little, they look like blood bleeds under my skin, mostly on my arm. Mm-hmm. And my regular doctor said, oh, they're just bruises. I said, they're not bruises. Mm-hmm. They look like I've been scraped, and they don't hurt or anything.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And it takes them 2 or 3 weeks to go away.
Right.
So it's kind of unsightly on my arm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's purpura or petechiae, but it's more than just little dots or a round circle. It almost looks like a scrape.
Uh-huh. What do you? By the way, you used the scientific words, medical words, purpura and petechiae. What did you do for a living?
I was a teacher.
You were a teacher. Okay, that's it. I just wanted to check because you were using exact words on there. Please, now go on. That's I can tell that at all. Now, do you take any medications at all?
Yeah, I take blood pressure medication and cholesterol medication and seizure medication.
Uh-huh. Any aspirin at all?
No, I don't take aspirin.
Okay, because aspirin.
I already knew that would. It thins your blood and everything.
Right.
Yeah. And my blood counts, my doctor said, are perfectly normal, So I don't know. I've done experiments. I switched my blood pressure medication and, I really can't stop taking the other medications and they're the best ones for me. But I was concerned that it might be salt. Excessive salt, because I noticed if I go have a pizza or something, which is very, very salty, I might get them the next day. So I've tried to cut down on my salt. Very difficult, though.
Yeah. I don't think it's salt. I mean, we eat too much salt in the American diet, but I don't think there's any evidence of salt. There are a couple of things going on. Unfortunately, even though you may look 60, you're 73. So you may look 60, but you're not 60. You know, when it comes to medical problems, you're 73. But you're a young 73, whatever that means. You know, young 70, there is young 73 and an old 73. We know what that is.
Yeah.
It's the way people look. It's the way people act. It's the strength people have. It's exercise. There are a whole bunch of things that go into, you don't look 73, you look 60. And I think that's really important. Unfortunately, as we get older, our skin tends to thin out, and we tend to have more petechiae and purpura. We tend to have more little blood bleeds below the skin. And unfortunately, it's just a problem with the fact that it's a skin issue, and the skin becomes more frail, to use a better word. It's just not, it's just not as robust, and you get little bleeds because the blood vessels break. You've got to, first of all, look at medicines. You've done that. You've talked to your doctor. You've talked to your pharmacist to see whether or not any of these medicines are associated with it. There are none that I can think of right now, but I always say, when in doubt, talk to your pharmacist. They are the experts on this. And make sure it's not one of your medicines. Talk to your local pharmacist. Say, please look all this up. Are any of these associated with it? Because if they go possibly and you've got an analogous medication, you may want to switch to that medication, as you said.
Well, that's great advice, because I have not talked to the pharmacist.
They know a lot.
I never even thought about that.
They know a lot more than we do. Let me tell you. When I look at it, I go, well, it doesn't look like it's, there's a possibility here. I don't know. I know the drugs to some extent, but I don't know them as well as the pharmacist. Mm-hmm. That is their expertise.
Yeah.
So see if it's drug-related. That's number one. Number two, the only other thing to do is, like you say, they're blisters. They come from inconsequential marking. I get them on my arm. I'll look at it and I'll go, where'd I get that black and blue mark? Well, it's not a black and blue mark. It's a blood vessel that broke, and I probably just bumped it slightly, or maybe I did nothing.
Yeah.
So, but
talk
to your pharmacist. Drug-related, that's what you want to be sure, as long as you know there's not a medical problem there, because things called petechiae can be from vasculitis and other things. And if your doctor has checked that out, I assume.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he did a blood count on me, and he just told me I'm getting old.
Well, yes. No, you actually are. The French call it the third age. The first age is when we're young. Second age is when we're productive and we reproduce and have children. And now you're in the third age. You're not old. You're in the third age. And if I could pronounce the third age in French, I would do it, but I cannot. Thanks.
Okay, well,
thanks
that's
for your
good
call.
Advice. I will talk to my pharmacist. Thank you, and thank you, Tom, too.
Oh, thanks a lot. We appreciate that call.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. Thanks, Tom.
Nobody ever thanked me.
I don't thank you enough.
Well,
we need a song. You know, we need a thank you, Tom song. Well, we got to figure that out. I just have a feeling that one day we're going to get a thank you, Tom song.
Well, I guess I don't deserve a thank you when all I do is say, now we have a caller, Zorba.
Everyone deserves a thank you. Ed McMahon deserved a thank you. George Fenneman deserved a thank you, for those of you who remember Groucho Marx.
Okay, moving right along, Zorba.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
Let's pry open the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and share a listener question. The following email came to us from Michael, who writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, please offer me some advice. Our daughter is flying home with her six-month-old grandson, and our son-in-law refuses to let him be vaccinated against the flu. How concerned should we be? His family is a believer of the vaccine autism link. What precautions should she take for the airplane trip to try to minimize his exposure to any bugs out there?"
Well, first of all, one of the things they should do is educate their relatives on the autism link. It has been disproven. It's been disproven because the rate of autism has continued to rise, even in areas of the world for a while where they actually stopped vaccinating. And the second thing they should really realize is that vaccines are really good for you. Now, you may not win that argument initially, but quite often people actually change that argument over time. So that's number one. Number two, hand washing is really important. That's what you do. It's an infant. You try to keep the infant away from other people because the infant may then get influenza. Remember, we never used to actually vaccinate kids and infants for influenza until recently, and now we've discovered it's really important because they get it too and they get sick also. So just, you know, like I say, using Purell and other things to keep that baby away, and that's about as much as you can do on the airplane.
She ends the email, "Sincerely concerned grandparents."
Yes, right, which is exactly correct.
Have a tricky health question for Zorba? He'll give it a shot. Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones now, Zorba, at 800-462-7413. And now we welcome a caller from Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hello, gentlemen. And let me start by saying thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay.
That's right.
Yes, let me handle your question. What is
Well, I too am in my third age, and that being the case, I spend a fair amount of time at home, and with the weather being as it is now, my house, the humidity really drops. So what I have been doing is I use a single-room humidifier. Now, the instructions on the humidifier say to use distilled water. Mm-hmm. I buy distilled water. It's about a buck and a half a gallon, and I go through about 2 gallons a day. Mm-hmm. And that starts to become a significant cost by the end of the month. Uh-huh. Mm. So what I have tried is to use tap water.
Sure.
My water coming in here is at 8.3 grains per gallon, so it's pretty hard. And I run it through a water softener, and then I run it through a filter pitcher.
Sounds good.
So that's about all I can do.
I think that's fine. The issue is basically if you've got hard water, which is calcium, generally it's just going to clog the humidifier itself. It doesn't do any harm to use tap water. Not at all.
All right. Sounds great.
Do you feel better with the higher humidity?
Yeah. When I don't use it, I tend to have more throat irritation, dry sinuses, chapped lips.
Yeah, and that's usually the case. But when it was dry, when there were rugs when I was a kid, you'd rub your foot on the rug and then you'd shock the person next to you. I don't know if you remember doing it, but do you remember doing it, Tom?
You'd
go on the rug, you rub it, and then you touch one of the adults, and there'd be a little shock, and they'd go, "What are you doing?"
I was the youngest child, so I tended to be more the shocky than the shocker.
Oh, you were the shocky versus the shocker. That's right.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. His question was for me, but you did a nice job with it.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Tom.
Okay, before we head out for today, Zorba, time to fire up the segment we call Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
A listener named Gary posted the following on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. Dr. Zorba, I really enjoy listening to your show, but I would like to take slight issue with something I've heard you say before on your show. You say that if food has more than 5 ingredients in it, then it's industrial and isn't any good. But most of the recipes you share on the show have more than 5 ingredients.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
This seems to be a bit of a double standard.
Yeah. Well, actually, what I come from is Michael Pollan's book, and he said if food is manufactured with more than 5 ingredients, it may be artificial. It's not that you need – it's not once you go over 5 ingredients, it's artificial. It's that when you look at the package like Twinkies and it's got 42 ingredients in it, then you know, hey, I mean the Twinkie is the paradigm of something that's artificial. So his theory – and it's really not a theory. It's sort of a guideline – is if it's got like 10 or 15 ingredients, you're eating an industrialized product, pre-made. Mm-hmm. It's got 5 ingredients. Once again, manufactured, industrialized food. We're not talking about your regular recipes because some of them, actually a lot of them have. There was a cookbook that we would give our kids when they went off to college, Cooking with 5 Ingredients. And they often used Campbell's soup as one of the 5 ingredients. That's what I remember.
Have a healthy living question for the good doc. Just post on our Facebook page, or you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org and, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brand Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For more information on Dr. Zorba Pastor and to listen to current or past episodes, go to ZorbaPastor.org. There you can subscribe to the weekly podcast, and you will find the show archive, Zorba's favorite recipes, his healthy living articles, and other helpful tips heard on the show. That's ZorbaPastor.org.